It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent. Longer life expectancy and the 2008 economic downturn combined to keep people in the workforce much longer than they normally would be. That means that between the traditionalists and the Generation Zers, there could be as many as five generations working in the same office space at the same time. Well, that can cause some problems, but our guest says there are ways for all these generations to learn how to better communicate and work together. And we're going to spend the next hour finding out how. Plus, we want to hear your intergenerational workplace stories. Do you work in an office setting? And what's the age range of your coworkers? What's it like working with individuals from different generations? Has it been difficult? Has it been enjoyable? Why? Why not? Are you part of the older working generation? What challenges have you faced being in the office the longest? Has technology been a struggle? And what else doesn't work? And what do you think works great? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And as I said, this topic is going to run the full hour. So we'll have plenty of time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Diane Bierstocker is the president of Human Resources Consulting LLC based in Green Bay. Diane, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's break down the generations currently in the workplace. Who are they and what distinguishes these groups from one another?
Well, as you said in your intro, there's actually five groups, five generations that are co-working in any given workplace right now. You've got the traditionalists. They're certainly at the older end of the spectrum. Those are the people that were born before 1945, so they're 74 and older. But as you indicated, because of the recession in 2008, longer life expectancies, there's a lot of older people in the workplace. Then we have the baby boomers, Generation X, Y, or the millennials, and then the most recent group to enter the workforce is Generation Z, and those are the ones that were born 1996 and afterwards. And it's quite a challenge, different motivators for each of those groups.
Well, that would be really easy to imagine. So why are more places of work seeing this trend of multiple generations in the office? What are the contributing factors here?
Well, first off, the situation we have now in the labor market is unprecedented. I've been working in human resources for almost 40 years, and I've never seen the tight labor market that we have right now. So it's a lack of a large pool of workers available that has forced employers to reevaluate keeping workers probably longer than they normally would, who they bring in. You're not able to be as discriminatory in terms of, all right, here's my ideal person. We don't have 20 candidates to pick from like we might have years ago, and we have to make some concessions in terms of who we bring in. It's definitely, you know, the job seekers market, not the employers market right now.
So why are older people opting to work longer?
Well, first off, they're living longer. There seems to be more of a desire to stay active, stay involved. Certainly finances may play a part of it. They may have eroded some of their savings and investments during some of the economic downturns that have occurred over the last 10, 11 years. And simply, you know, an interest in having a more active life. As I talk to workers that are looking for the next opportunity, or I'm working with our client groups and talking to some of the employees, what I'm hearing is, I enjoy my job. As long as I can physically handle it, I want to keep working. And it's amazing, as I, again, work with our clients, to see people that are celebrating you know, 50 years of employment with one company, mm-hmm. or 55 years that I had recently. They're just not, right now, programmed to automatically leave at age 62 or age 65, like traditionally happened, probably going back more 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Let's talk about the value systems that generations tend to maintain. How do these are there different values for different generations, and what are they?
Well, there's certainly different. Let's use the term motivators for each of the groups. The traditionalists, the baby boomers, you know, the oldest group that's in the workforce. They're more of that mindset of they were raised in that we have to go to work in order to provide our livelihood. So we work to live. When you look at the younger groups, the millennials, the generation, you know, X, Y, they're more concerned with I'm working for satisfaction, but more importantly, to support my lifestyle and let me do the things that I want. So, for example, the older people, a lot of them, they've built up a lot of vacation, but they don't necessarily take it. They'll end up selling it back to the company. They're the ones that are more willing to work the overtime and put in longer hours for extra pay. The younger employees, their free time, PTO or vacation, is one of their most valuable benefits, and they view it as being punished, basically, if they have to put in more than a typical 40-hour week. They want their time off.
I used to get written up, not in a horrible way, but my supervisor used to complain that I didn't use enough of my vacation. So I hear that. Diane Bierstecker is the president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. We're talking about multi-generational workplaces these days. It's a tight labor market, and there you get a lot of different generations in the same office. We've been talking about kind of the work ethic of different generations. How do you help workers and leaders not to judge others based on age? Because I mean, if I'm of the group that says, well, you know, you have to work, and you know, overtime is good, and then there's another group that's got a different view. How do we keep these things from conflicting?
Well, one of the things that I like to recommend is trying to establish a relationship where you pair up the different generations together. So to try to develop that coach or buddy system or mentor system in order to try to build bridges to narrow that gap, to look for opportunities to get them collaborating on a project, for example, in the office, working together so that they have an opportunity to, you know, interact with the person, learn from some of their reactions, some of their experiences, some of their ideas, and hopefully end up getting closer to bridging that gap and finding a common ground.
Mm-hmm. Diane Bierstecker stays with us as our conversation about intergenerational workplaces continues. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. From traditionalists to Generation Z, today's workplaces may be home to as many as five generations. We're learning how to avoid the pitfalls inherent in these age differences from an HR consultant, and we want to hear your stories. Are you in a workplace where there's a wide gap from youngest to oldest? How's that worked? What's good? What's bad about it? If you're involved in human resources, how do you manage intergenerational conflict and keep everyone on the same page? Share your stories with us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Diane Bierstecker is the president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. Diane, earlier we were talking about the way different generations do or don't take vacations. Can this difference in values create rifts between generations in the workplace? Does one generation get irritated at the other for the way they see things, and then it colors the way they work with them?
Certainly you see a difference between the, as we were talking earlier, the vacation time that gets taken. So what can happen is the older workers resent the fact that the younger people are more prone to use all of their vacation. They're not as constrained in terms of, well, we have a big project that's due next week. I'm still going on vacation on Friday. It'll be there when I get back. The older generation is more focused on typically the commitment to the project, getting the results done, wanting to get it done ahead of schedule. And I think with the younger workers, there can be a tendency to basically practice just in time in terms of getting those projects done, because, again, they're not living to work. They're wanting to have that balance. You know, as employers, we always talk about wanting our employees to use all of their vacation time to maintain that work-life balance so they don't get burnt out. And the younger people certainly hear that loud and clear, and that's one of their strong motivators. But the older workers don't necessarily understand that. They're just programmed to keep coming into work every day, and I'll use some of a vacation, but not all of it. But it's not driving the way that I live my life. Work is more important.
How can managers help them get over these differences?
Well, one of the things that you certainly want to do is have more regular check-ins or follow-up with your workers. You know, the time when, well, you know, we'll talk to them as we need to, or we'll only talk to them when there's a problem, or let's wait till they do their annual review. Those days are gone in terms of well-managed, you know, efficient, effective organizations. The younger workforce needs that regular daily check-in. They need to know that they're being noticed, their contributions are being recognized, and they want to know what's going on in the organization. The older workers are more inclined to, well, if there's something I need to know, the boss will come to me, but in the meantime, I'll just keep plugging along. So there's more pressure on the supervisors and leaders of a company to make sure that they keep those younger employees engaged and aware of where they fit in the organization and that their contributions are valued and appreciated.
There can be issues. We had a caller who couldn't stay with us who said one issue in her workplace was that sometimes older employees have difficulty with newer technologies, may not have social media skills or some other things that are like second nature to younger people. How big a problem is that, and what can be done about it?
Well, that was a very accurate observation from whoever called in, because technology is one of the critical divisions between the workforce. You know, the younger workers that have come in, they're accustomed to constantly adapting to new technology. You know, take cell phones. What is it? Every year they're pretty much upgrading because there's new features, new technology. And you've got someone who's sitting there with the newest and greatest, you know, smartphone, and their older coworker may still be using a flip phone. And, you know, the workplace is communicating more through cell phone technology, it becomes difficult for a lot of the older workers. For example, for many companies, the time and attendance, you know, recording when you start work and stop work is done through your telephone. It's not done at a traditional punch clock or just writing your time down on a piece of paper. The virtual meetings that are being held because there's more employees that are working remotely. The fact that you don't have to all be in the same office in order to work effectively and productively. And that becomes difficult in terms of the video conferencing and Skyping and keeping the remote workers tuned in to the rest of the organization. You know, the younger workers have seen technology change continually. Older workers are struggling. And that's definitely a point of contention.
Yeah, I think, you know, older workers probably have seen some technology changes, but not as rapidly, perhaps, as younger workers would. And it's across all fields, too. If you look at education and look at what's in the classrooms with smart boards and things like that, some of that technology can be very intimidating if you're not really used to it. I can see that. So, but there have to be some benefits of having generational differences in the workplace culture. What are they?
Certainly the knowledge transfer, being able to take advantage and have collaboration across all the generations. You know, while, yes, as we've discussed, the older workers are staying longer, but you're still needing to prepare for the loss of that legacy knowledge. So making sure that you are pairing up old and younger together so that they can each benefit from the knowledge the other person has. The older person who's been there for a long time, you know, that 50-year veteran that I mentioned, they have a lot of legacy knowledge that's, you know, it's not in the computer systems, it's in their heads. So being able to transfer that to the younger people, and then the younger people helping with technology. The other thing is for the young people to see that they have a clear path for additional responsibilities and promotion within the organization. That's critical. You know, people are not staying 50 years with one company. I know years ago when we were recruiting, if people were changing jobs frequently, they were viewed as job jumpers and unreliable and probably you're not your first choice to be hired. Now, what we're seeing is that the millennials and the Generation Z, they're changing jobs on average every 18 months. And you have to adjust your thinking that that's not a negative. That's just the way the workforce is now. And as a result, those people coming in are bringing much more varied experiences that can be of benefit to that company. You know,
Let's
you want gain from that.
I want to try to get a call in here before we have to go for news. Let's go to La Crosse, sure, where Mike is with us. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, your guest there hit it nail on the head, and there's a lot of things that are true and a lot of stereotypes that are true. I'm 50-plus years old. I manage different generations, and whereas it's good to be aware of the stereotypes, it's really important to understand the values that they bring in. And your guest was just talking about that from the standpoint that the older generation can learn the technology piece from the younger generation and vice versa. The younger generation can really learn how to work. Really, it's our duty to help train and really communicate with them. And I think your last point there was really key from the standpoint that what I've seen is there's not as much patience to grow and develop and to move up in the organization. And you really have to have clear communication with all levels and all people in your organization to have success, because you really need to understand that even though growth and development is important, you know, promotions every 18 months may not be likely. And so really a lot of good things being said, but just would comment the fact that it's really about communication, understanding, and seeing the value in each generation and see how we can work together is the important piece of success.
Mike, thanks so much for your comment. We've got about 30 seconds before we have to go to break. You want to address what Mike had to say? I think it's exactly what you were talking about.
Yes, and I would underscore the need for more and more often communication between the workforce. Mm-hmm. You need to risk over-communicating than under-communicating. And sometimes that's uncomfortable for the older managers.
Diane Bierstecker is president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. Our conversation about multi-generational workforces will continue after a short break for news. We want to hear your stories about the workplace. Particularly, I'm intrigued by the whole legacy thing. In your workplace, how are you, for lack of a better word, extracting the experiences of workers about to retire so that you can preserve them and not reinvent the wheel? 800-642-1234. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. From traditionalists to Generation Z, today's workplaces may be home to as many as five generations. We're learning how to avoid the pitfalls inherent in these age differences from an HR consultant. We're wondering, what's your intergenerational workplace story? If you're a traditionalist or a boomer, what's it like to work with millennials or people from Gen Z? If you're a millennial or from Generation Z or X or Y, pick your alphabet. Yeah, what's it like to work with someone old enough to be a grandparent? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Diane Bierstecker is president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. We've got some people who've joined us by phone. Let's go to Blue River first and hear from Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to the morning show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us your story.
So I am a police officer, and I have been now for going on 6 years. I'm 28, and I actually just went to a training on this topic, funny enough, so it kind of caught my interest. But I would like to say that having an older generation in law enforcement is crucial because there are just things that a book won't teach you, and having that guidance coming from somebody who's been on the force for 20 years is treasurable. I mean, you can't take that experience that you gained from that for anything. But also, we're having a problem with our hiring. Nobody seems to want to be a police officer because in this job, you start on third shift, you work every holiday, you work every weekend normally. And it seems like my generation, or even the generation a little bit younger than me, don't want to do that. They value time with their families. And I have two daughters, and I miss a lot. I'm actually driving 2.5 hours to go see my daughter's spring concert right now after working 10. But those are just things that you kind of have to deal with. So I guess my question for her would be, how do we get my generation or younger generations wanting to be in law enforcement when, you know, they have to work nights and weekends? And how do we make that like they want it? How do we get them to want to come and work in this environment?
Jennifer, thanks for sharing your story, and thank you for your service in law enforcement as well. What about that? How there are professions like law enforcement, being an emergency medical technician, things like that, that initially the hours are going to be horrible. How can you recruit in those professions based on what you've already mentioned about people, you know, not living to work but working to live?
I think one of the things that's most important is to convey to the job applicants and the candidates that there's things that you can't change. The fact that they'll have to start on third shift, that there is frequently they're the ones that get tapped, as she said, for weekends, et cetera. But that to the extent we can within the organization, we're willing to provide flexibility. So, for example, you're driving to an event with your daughter, the ability to leave early, the ability to say, you know, I'm normally scheduled to work this weekend. Let's see, I have a problem. Is there someone that's willing to switch with me? You know, trying to avoid mandatory overtime, trying to avoid the mandatory holidays, and perhaps looking for volunteers. and people that might be willing to take those shifts that are difficult for people with young families, or if they don't have a family, they still have a lot of interests and activities. So flexibility in today's workforce is critical if you're going to retain your employees. They need to know from management and from the supervisors that you are trying to maintain a balance. Work is not everything, and to the extent I can, I will work with you on flexibility. But keep in mind that I need it from you as well, because there's things that do come up.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine, you know, with law enforcement, your shift is supposed to end at 10 o'clock, but if you're in the middle of an incident, you're going to have to stay over. And that creates a hardship, whether it's childcare or just other activities. But flexibility is incredibly important in today's workforce.
And something that Jennifer mentioned early on in her comments about the value of older employees, and that their experiences can't be put in a book or a training manual. There are things that people know how to do that you just can't write down and share that way. How important is it to capture that legacy before it walks out the door?
It's very important, because there's many things that might only come up once in your career or twice in your career, so that the majority of people you're working with have not experienced it. So to the extent that you can pair up the seasoned veterans with the new employees so that they can share that experience and be able to tap into that when something comes up is important. I mean, especially in law enforcement, and I would say it's similar in HR, no 2 days are ever alike. You know, when someone makes a call on 911 and tells you there's a problem, you really don't know what the extent of that problem is until you show up. Same thing in HR, or if you're a member of management and an employee comes and says, hey, Diane, do you have a minute to talk to me? I don't know if that's going to be a simple exchange of information that takes 30 seconds, or whether it's the tip of an iceberg and all of a sudden there's a huge problem that needs to be addressed. So being able to tap into the wiser, more experienced people and capture how do we handle some of these unusual situations is absolutely critical. She's exactly right.
We have a lot of callers on the line. Let's take a call from Kyle in Prentice next. Kyle, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. What's your story?
I'm a Generation X, 32 years old. I maintain two maintenance crews, and I've had the opportunity to maintain guys from 19 years old up to late 50s. And I think the intergenerational inside the workplace is amazing, as long as you have a leader that can implement good strategies. Younger guys, obviously, as said before, need that praise. They need to be talked to. The older generations seem to get their work, get it done, and don't need that praise. And while that's happening, the older generation seems to be setting a good example for the younger generation, and the younger generation is teaching the older generation some of the new tricks of the trade or technologies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kyle, thanks for your story. And Diane, I can't see you, but I think you're nodding your head here.
I am. I'm definitely nodding my head. And it sounds like he has good management skills to recognize the best way to utilize the talents of each of the different groups that he manages. So,
Kyle, thanks.
That's what makes it effective.
Thanks for your call. Let's get a call in next from Matt in Manitowish Waters. Matt, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This topic is kind of near and dear to my heart because I work in manufacturing and have for a long time. And one of the things I noticed is upper management, and I mean the executives who run a facility, they grew up, or they took their careers and their professions based on a factory floor of traditionalists and baby boomers who had a work ethic that kept people working 50 and 60 hour weeks, working holidays, working weekends. And as the generations change and more of the baby boomers retire and Gen X and millennials come up on the floor, they have a work-life balance that requires the executive team to respect that the younger generation, they don't seem to want to work more than 40 hours a week. I'm 40. I'm mostly millennial traits, and I have a strong work-life balance where I believe going to work ends at the end of the day. You go home, and then you have your life. And to me, I have a good balance, and it has created a little friction, but not enough that I'm alienating myself in the workforce. As we get older and more millennials and Gen Xers work their way into the executive teams, it's going to be an interesting 10 or 20 years going forward in all sectors of work, I believe.
Matt, great points there. An interesting take. Diane, want to comment on what Matt had to say?
One of the things, especially regarding Matt's comment, is the idea that at the end of the day, you want to be done. One of the things that's happened, again, because of technology, is that frequently the job doesn't end when you walk out the door because everyone's still connected to the office using their smartphones, whether it's email or instant messaging or sending work product after the workday. I think that there's some confusion in terms of, if I get an email after work, am I expected to respond to it when it comes in? Or is that something that, you know, I wait until the next morning? So I think communication in terms of the technology, the expectations, I mean, are you truly off duty once you walk out? Or is there an expectation that you're going to check the mail during your after hours or on weekends? Older generation may not even think about it. The younger generation, they're constantly on their phones and connected. So I think that's an area that needs to be clearly communicated.
I'll tell you, if you asked my wife while I was working full-time, I was never off duty. So
correct.
That's just, you know, how I liked it. I wanted to be getting that call if something went wrong because I wanted to deal with it right away rather than have it hit me in the face when I walked in the door the next morning. Well, right now the clock is tapping on our shoulders and telling us we need to take a quick break, but we will continue our conversation with Diane Bierstecker, president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. We're talking about multi-generational workplaces, and we want to hear your stories. We've been hearing some really great stories this morning. Yours could be next at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email. Our email address is ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Net. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Diane Bierstecker is the president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. She's with us this hour to talk about the pitfalls and benefits of multi-generational offices. These days, it's not all that unusual to have as many as five different generations working in the same office. And we've been hearing stories all this hour about people in these multi-generational workplaces. Jennifer shared in an email that she is a nurse and technology differences can be a great way to develop mentoring relationships. She was trained to be a nurse 25 years ago, and then she later taught her trainer how to use the computer. Diane, how can technology be a uniter in this way?
I think it helps break down that gap that we've talked about between the different workforces. So I think using technology as a way to, it's one area where knowledge needs to be shared, just like the legacy knowledge we talked about from the older workers. But I think it's a great way to try to get the employees to bond and work together, learning something new at the same time. So I think having multifaceted groups together from different departments mixing up the age groups that get together for technology training, anything that you can do to bring them together so that they can learn from each other and see each other in different work environments is a great idea.
Let's take another call. David is with us in Amherst. David, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Yes. My question is, had been a teacher for many years, and it seems to me from observing others that the workday is really never done. You're always planning something, correcting information or doing research. So it's not like punching in and punching out. Wondering how the younger generation feels about that.
David, thank you. We heard earlier from someone who said law enforcement is having a tough time recruiting. It's getting more difficult to recruit young people into the teaching profession, isn't it, Diane?
I would say yes, that it is. One of the things that is not generally possible within the teaching or educational area is the flexibility that we talked about earlier, where if you're recruiting people for unfavorable or undesirable shifts, third shifts, weekend shifts, that type of thing, you can generally offset some of the concerns with flexibility. With the teachers, there isn't that level of flexibility. They're expected to be there Monday through Friday. Any day that school's in session, it can be incredibly difficult to take off time from a regular schedule because the school administrators do not want to see disruption in the classroom or revolving door of substitute teachers because the regular teacher wants time off. They have their summers generally, but during the 9 months that school's in session, there's very little flexibility, and that makes for a challenge when you're trying to hire and fill those jobs.
I can tell you that teachers work during the summer even when they're not being paid because they have to get ready for the next school year. So the myth of summers off is just that, a myth. And the reason I can say that is my wife was a teacher and my daughter's a teacher, so I hear all about this at home. What does the future hold for work and workplace culture in the coming decades, do you think?
The emphasis on communication, making sure that the employers are engaged in management by wandering, that they are out and about interacting with their workers, checking in with them, knowing what's important to them, knowing who's struggling, knowing who needs help, knowing who has capacity to take on more work, that constant knowing what's going on and how, and being aware of what your employees are valuing or what they're struggling with. Job posting system, for example, in many companies, they post open jobs. Sometimes when we're dealing with clients, they say, well, you know, I hate to post the jobs because then I have to talk to all those people who might want it. And that's exactly why you post the jobs.
Absolutely.
You may not have anyone qualified, but it's a great opportunity to talk to your people, find out what they are interested in, what their goals are, and to try to match that up to keep them in the organization.
And that's a great place.
You don't want them leaving.
That's a great place for us to leave it. Diane, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You are welcome. It was my pleasure.
Diane Bierstecker is the president of Human Resources Consulting, LLC, based in Green Bay. Small wineries around the country are proving they can make a product people want to drink and socialize around. While the businesses can't compete on the level of those, say, in California's Napa Valley, it turns out the upper Midwest has good soil and microclimates for grapes and fruits. In the next story in our series, High Tolerance, Patty Murray reports wineries are having a multi-million dollar economic impact on Wisconsin.
Steve Johnson surveys his grapevines at Kewaunee's Parallel 44 Winery.
Even though from your mindset you're like, this is Wisconsin, this is like beer country, Packers, frozen tundra, not wine country.
Johnson bought his 25-acre former cornfield near the shores of Lake Michigan in 2006. He now has 8,000 vines.
But we chose this place because from a grape growing perspective, it was the ideal spot because you need the proximity to the lake. And this is right on top of the escarpment. Actually, it's a form of gravel pit. So I searched a lot of soil maps and chose this place. And I realized it's a perfect place to grow grapes, but it's kind of off the beaten path. So
Parallel 44 opens the doors of its tasting room to thirsty tourists on their way to or from Door County. Inside, the magic happens in the tank room.
These are what you call your fermentation aging vessels. So the key thing on these tanks is the banding on the sides. This is a coolant that runs around the perimeter of the...
As its name indicates, Parallel 44 is on the 44th parallel. If one traveled about 4,000 miles east, they would end up in the famous wine regions of Bordeaux or Tuscany. Johnson says the region's soils of the local geography, known as the Niagara Escarpment, are good for hybrid cold hardy grapes. And Wisconsin wines are drawing wine tourists. A 2016 study by Michigan State University found wine tourists spent nearly $50 million in 2015. Author Dan McColl is an associate professor of community sustainability at the school. He says those visitors aren't necessarily connoisseurs.
The quality of the wine doesn't need to be the highest. It doesn't need to rival France or California. It just needs to be good enough. And then people can have a very nice experience because some of the wineries in Wisconsin are quite beautiful, and they offer wonderful tasting room experiences for people who may never go to Napa or, you know, to the Loire Valley of France.
McColl's study also showed wineries provide employment to people in rural areas where manufacturing and other industries have shut down. A 2013 study done by UW Extension showed Wisconsin provides more than 700 wine-related jobs. Ripon, once known as Cookie Town, is an example. Two cookie factories closed in 2015 and 2016. The Vines and Rushes Winery planted its first vines in 2007 in Ripon. Owner Ryan Prelwitz says he now produces up to 70,000 bottles a year. Prelwitz is also president of the Wisconsin Winery Association. He says there are around 100 wineries statewide.
There's easier ways to make money than owning a winery. One of the old jokes in the industry is the only way to make a small fortune in the wine industry is to start with a large one. And so there's easier businesses to run than something that's as vertically integrated as this one.
But that hasn't stopped wineries from growing. And more established alcohol interests in the state haven't always been welcoming. Wisconsin's powerful Tavern League has opposed letting tasting rooms stay open past 9 p.m., which wineries say hurts their ability to host weddings and other events. Prelwitz says even though Wisconsin has that beer state reputation, there are just as many people who want the fruit of the vine and a growing number of businesses that want to provide it. Patty Murray, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can read more about this story and see the rest of our series, High Tolerance, at WPR.org/alcohol. This is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.